Chapter 17 Saturday Night Hop. Hand in hand, on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon, the moon. Edward Lear. Victoria was an archetypal first-year medical student, diligently attending the 9 a.m. lecture each morning. By then, I had learned that my ability to focus on and retain material dwindled as the day progressed, so I rose early, a habit from my Cairo days, and studied for 2 to 3 hours before breakfast and a couple of hours thereafter. Underlining details and making marginal notes of my own made the information easier to retain than listening to a teacher spout out fact after fact. This schedule mismatch meant that we seldom walked to the department together, but we frequently met during lunch break when I would spy her in the refectory. Her beauty awed me as she sat among her new acquaintances. During the first week, she was constantly in the company of a fellow student, Jane, which stopped me from approaching her. Her gaze followed me as I ambled by, waving slightly. I felt awkward and shy at asking her out, thinking she would decline. One afternoon my fortunes changed. Soon after she started to dissect her cadaver on the alphabetical P table, conveniently located near the M, she sought me out. Approaching in her long white coat and carrying the dissection manual and looking radiantly attractive, she said, "Could you please help me? I have dissected out the left vagus nerve from its exit at the base of the skull, through the chest to the heart and beyond. I cannot find the right one." I accompanied her to her cadaver. She and her team had done a fine dissection of the chest cavity, exposing all the pertinent structures and organs, much more diligently than we had done on Fred a year earlier. "You see," she said, studiously pointing, "here is the nerve, but where is the right vagus?" "Ah," I said, "come with me." I led her around the table to the other side of the cadaver. "See, it's right here. That's why they call it the right vagus." She blushed. Even in her moment of embarrassment, she looked sunny. "Oh, goodness." "Most structures come in twos, right and left." I paused to ease her feelings. "Including the eyes, ears, lungs, kidneys, and, to stay clinical, breasts and testicles. The brain and liver have left and right lobes. Does that help?" She nodded. Taking advantage of the moment, I nervously asked if she would come with me to the hop scheduled the following Saturday night in the central hall of University College under the Octagon Dome. It was the first social event of the academic year. A local group was jamming, and we could dance and sing to current hits. She agreed. I was triumphant. The next couple of days we walked back to Cartwright Gardens together, lingering before parting. After dinner, we visited in each other's rooms. We explored joint interests and shared our life stories, becoming more comfortable with each other. Whereas music was my passion, she had an incredible artistic side. She loved to draw anatomical representations of the human form and admired Da Vinci's drawings in the books she shared with me. Fearing the enthusiasm of my growing emotions, I strove to keep my feelings for her at the platonic level. Responding in kind, she treated me like a brother. She spoke often of Massimo, describing him as an oversexed young Italian she had met in Germany, one who tried on numerous times to kiss her and stick his tongue into her mouth. I got the impression that he was particularly insensitive to her conformist upbringing, where her mother's emphasis was on being a nice girl. Were such anecdotes a form of warning, or was she sufficiently comfortable in sharing these stressful experiences? I was confused, particularly because her beauty, grace, and charm dazzled me, making me fearful of approaching her intimately. I was confused by my intense feelings for this woman and her responses that I could not interpret. I waited for her to move the relationship forward, fearing I might lose her if I pushed too hard. Maybe our relationship would grow with time, security, and comfort. She was engagingly intelligent, adding a new dimension to my life. She made me feel like a whole person, one who was important. In a class of 100 male wolves, just having Victoria Perfect's close friendship was perfection itself. It felt good. When they saw us dance at the hop, they would salivate with jealousy. She was mine. Admission to the hop cost 5 shillings each, which was collected at the door, quite a tidy sum that I did not readily have. There would also be drinks to purchase. These additional expenses had not been considered when Mother and I worked out my living expenses. Certainly, my Manchester educational grant did not allot for such a budget-line item. In Arab culture, men paid, and I knew that was the case in England too. I did not want to ask Victoria to contribute, certainly not on our first date, even though I knew her scholarship exceeded mine, as she had told me in confidence. A solution had to exist. I did not have the means to entertain this most desirable woman at a level she deserved. What to do? There must be a way. I devised a plan to circumvent the 10 shillings admission fee. We would enter the dance hall from an inside door via a series of corridors, classrooms, connecting halls and passages through different departments. We would start in the Department of Anatomy and walk north, parallel to Gower Street, toward the music. Victoria expressed no objections. At 6 in the evening, the heavy oak door leading from Gower Street to our department gave way to my shoulder, and we entered the dimly lit entrance hall. I closed the door behind us. Victoria looked apprehensive, keeping her distance, particularly since I whispered each anticipated move, not quite knowing the precise pathway to our destination. I had a vague idea of following my instincts, keeping the traffic noise to our left with the music as a beacon. I had overlooked the fact that on Saturday night most of the buildings and corridors would be dark. I went ahead, exploring walls, groping for doors, and bumping into furniture. Victoria lagged behind, and I quietly egged her on. Several times I thought I heard voices coming from a room we passed. We froze. Were we going to be discovered? To be arrested for trespassing? The voices receded. They were passers-by in Gower Street. I took a deep breath and whispered, "Okay, let's go. Follow me." She cautiously followed my voice in the dark until I finally opened a door leading to the dimmed dance hall and the blasting music where the guitars wept, drums thundered, a singer screamed, and a mass of bodies heaved up and down. Although I was pleased for navigating successfully through the challenging maze, showing ingenuity at beating the system, I also felt cheap. What a jerk I was being. "I thought you were going to jump me in the dark," she yelled over the noise. I shook my head, acutely embarrassed at my plan's stupidity. We joined the dancers. Relieved at having achieved the goal of bypassing the gatekeepers, I literally twisted and shouted to the Beatles as the music throbbed from the stereo speakers. Even without the aid of alcohol, I danced without inhibition, joining in the songs. No one cared how I gyrated or what I sounded like. I was just happy that Victoria was with me. To my surprise, her movements were stiff. She expressed her discomfort in dancing, complaining that the music was too loud and that the floor was too crowded. I could see she was too self-conscious to let herself go and enjoy the evening. After dragging her through uncertain darkness, I should have bought her a drink right away. Some of my classmates saw us together and registered surprise. I might have been a fucking foreigner, but I had won the prize.